I felt like I didn't have a voice. What I said didn't matter. Nobody wanted to hear what I had to say. It just wasn't important. And so I spent most of my life just not sharing my thoughts or not, you know, telling people what I really thought or having an opinion because it just didn't matter. It's a miracle because had I stayed hurt and angry and, you know, ashamed because of all that trauma, had I not gotten healed and walked through all of that, I would not be able to do what I'm doing right now.
Healing, grief, and meaning making are not linear. It's all the beautiful cycle of life. Hey y'all, I'm Reese, and welcome to Making Meaning. Making Meaning is a podcast by the Cohere Collective here to help guide you along your path to make meaning in a way that makes sense for you. This week, I am joined by the host of the Life Stories podcast, mother, grandmother, and all-around lovely human being, Shara Goswick. Shara and I get into it in this episode. All of my favorite topics like the meaning of life, what our purpose here is, and what Shara thinks is really going on here behind the scenes, which for her is deeply tied to her Christian faith. But we also talk about the hard points of life, the really hard points of life, and how all of us have things happen to us that we don't deserve. But life is about how we respond to that. What do we do in the face of that? And that's what Shara really shares with us throughout this episode. I do have a content warning for you before we get into this episode. We discuss early childhood trauma and abuse, mainly in the first portion of the episode, but it comes up a few times throughout. I will put timestamps in the episode description so that you can watch with intentionality and care. As always, please take care of yourself and do what you need to do to make meaning on your terms. If you are interested in listening to the Life Stories podcast, it will be linked down below, as will Shara's website. And if you're interested in working with me, learning more about the Cohere Collective, all of those links are always in the description down below as well. Okay, that is all I have for you. So as always, let's take a deep breath. And get started. Well, Shara, thank you so very much for being here with me today, for so generously sharing your time with me. I'm really excited to be chatting.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun talking to you before, and so I've been looking forward to this.
Yes, me too. I did as well. It's like we were saying before we clicked record, it's always so funny to flip the script and be on the other side of the microphone. It was a pleasure to be interviewed by you, and I'm excited to return the favor.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you.
Yeah. Well, my first question that I always ask to hopefully just set a positive tone for our conversation is, what is one thing you're grateful for?
Oh, gosh. Just one? Gratitude is something that's very important to me. And so I try to wake up and just start thanking God for things. Everything I'm thankful for. I'm thankful for our home. I'm thankful for this property that we have lots of land, and thankful for my family. My daughter and my grandkids are coming to spend the night this week, and I'm thankful for a lot of things, lots of things.
Yeah, that's wonderful. You know, I've been thinking a lot about gratitude this week too, specifically because I think like a gratitude practice and writing down things that we're grateful for has become very common and popular to suggest in like the wellness and self-care spaces, which is beautiful. But I was watching something where I think it was a psychologist. I'm forgetting exactly what I was watching, but they were talking about how a lot of people feel like they force themselves into gratitude practices, that it can come from like if we grew up in a family where it was, you know, I don't like this food for dinner. And then you have the parent that says, well, there's a child in Africa. Right. He'd be very grateful for that food. You should be grateful. You can have kind of an opposition to gratitude practices. And so I just found that really interesting. And the tip that they offered to counteract that was to write down why, like, I am grateful for X because, and that makes me feel
blank.
Yeah.
And I found that the makes me feel was really, really powerful for me.
Oh, sure.
Because it's like, yeah, I am really grateful for this, not just because it's a thing that I should be grateful for,
right,
but because it makes me feel connected or supported, loved, you know, all that good stuff. So a little bit of a tangent to begin with, but something I've been thinking about.
Yeah, that's
my
awesome.
Second question. Yeah. Yeah. My second question to just open up our conversation, hopefully, is what is your story? I know that is a big question, but whatever you feel called to speak to in this moment is perfect.
I'm glad you're recording a long time because it could take a while.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, you know, how do I even begin telling my story? I will kind of start from now and go backwards if that, I don't know if that will make any sense at all.
That's perfect.
But, you know, I started my podcast a few years ago. Started for fun. I love talking to people. I love meeting new people. I like asking questions like you, you know, where are you from? What are you doing? Why are you doing that? I love all of that, just like you. And had I tried to start something that, like, I wouldn't have even begun to try to start something like that maybe 5 or 10 years before. I have spent many years of my adult life going to counseling and doing things to get healed from some trauma from my childhood. You know, it was something that wasn't talked about, wasn't thought about on purpose. It was always in the back of my head, you know. But I was married and had kids before I was ever kind of forced to begin dealing with that. And the biggest impact that that had on me was it silenced me. I felt like I didn't have a voice. What I said didn't matter. Nobody wanted to hear what I had to say. It just wasn't important. And so I spent most of my life just not sharing my thoughts or not, you know, telling people what I really thought or having an opinion because it just didn't matter, I felt like. So for me to have a podcast and to be, I just looked it up because next week is my 3-year anniversary. So I'm looking up some information to share on Monday. And I interviewed 97 people, I think, in the past year. And for me to be able to do that,
that's remarkable.
Isn't that crazy? It's crazy. And I know I'm not patting myself on the back, but I'm just astonished.
You should. Like, and you are more than allowed to.
I'm amazed when I look at all the things that people are doing that I was able to talk to and ask questions about.
Mm.
To me, it's a miracle because I couldn't have done that had I stayed hurt and angry and, you know, ashamed because of all that trauma. Had I not gotten healed and walked through all of that, I would not be able to do what I'm doing right now. I've been married for longer than you've been alive, I'm sure. I've been married for 33 years. I have 3 grown children, 2 grandchildren. That in itself is, you know, a story because I had my daughter in high school. I was a senior in high school when I had her. And we were married. 1992 was a big year for us. We had her in January, graduated high school in May, got married in June, and started college and life in August. So haven't really stopped since then. But I'm very thankful. Not a path I would ever encourage anybody to take. But man, I'm thankful that we were, you know, we had supportive families. We were able to walk through that. My daughter's like one of my best friends now. And so I can't possibly imagine doing this life with her, you know, without her in it. So I've got lots of stories. But,
yeah.
You know, coming from just a broken person to wanting to get healed and wanting to get rid of all that shame and hurt. And it's a lot of work to do that. And I don't say that about me. Anybody that wants to deal with that, it's hard. It's not fun. And so I'm very thankful where I am today because I do feel like I have my voice. I do feel like I'm able to speak and share. And when we first were married, you know, we were teenagers and my husband would get frustrated because I wouldn't tell him what I was really thinking. And I would, you know, it was hard. Now he says, I think you're getting a little too big for your britches. I'm like, well, that's okay. So anyway, that's a good portion of my story.
Yeah, absolutely. What to speak to this healing journey that you've really been on, and I mean, so many important points that I want to return to, of course, but to start with the decision to go to counseling, to choose to go on a healing journey, because I think a lot of most of us, I don't want to say all, because, you know, there's probably one human out there who didn't have a single ounce of childhood trauma. Like,
right.
I want to believe that it's possible.
I married
but
one.
Most
I'm
of
telling
us.
You. It is possible.
There you go. But most of us, even with beautiful, amazing, loving parents, make it out of childhood with, you know, internalized patterns and cycles that we need to heal from and deal with. What was the push that really allowed you to decide, I'm going to reclaim my voice. I'm going to do this work. And I want to do that enough that, like you said, it's hard. It's a hard journey to go on. And it requires a lot of grief, a lot of confronting yourself very honestly. What pushed you to choose that path, that journey?
The very beginning, I will tell you how it all started. It wasn't that I was thinking, I want to get past this. I was kind of forced to do it. So I'll be very vulnerable. I was abused by someone, an extended member of my family. It just was swept under the rug. I think, you know, my parents loved me and still love me to this day, but I think they didn't know how to handle it. And so it was easier to not deal with it than have to deal with it. I was in my 20s. I was married and had kids in my 20s. And I hadn't told my husband about any of it because, you know, as they ignored it, I ignored it. I tried to pretend like it never happened.
Yeah.
Well, we ran into that person again. I saw him and it triggered just everything, the thoughts and the memories and all the things. And so we had been at church, my husband and I had been at church, and I don't even remember what the message was about, but the title of it, because I started sobbing after he said the title of the message was, "It's not your fault." And then I just cried through the entire, I couldn't tell you anything he said. And we were sitting with some friends. I was sitting next to a friend and she was sitting next to her husband. And the whole time I'm sobbing, my husband's just looking at me like, what is wrong with you? You know, and she went and got me I think her husband went and got me some Kleenexes because literally I cried through the whole thing. Well, she knew, even though I didn't tell her, she knew because she had lived that herself. So later that week, she reached out to me and she said, look, I know what's going on. I know what happened. And she said, I walked that same road. And if you are interested, she said, someone bought me this book and she walked through it with me to begin healing. And she said, if you're interested, I will do that with you. So that was the very beginning. And from then on, really, the reason I continued to seek healing was because it affected me in a very big way. It affected my personality. It affected the way I thought. It affected my marriage. It affected the way I parented. I mean, it affected everything. And
yeah,
it had been repressed for so many years that it was just, things were just coming out, you know? My marriage was probably the biggest part of it. My marriage and my parenting were probably the biggest reasons. And it wasn't that I was saying, I'm going to go get healed and fixed. And I'm, you know, it was making life hard, not dealing with the effects of it. And so it was a slow journey. I mean, it took decades and it wasn't that everything just happened at once. It was a gradual thing. I think the year before I started my podcast was probably one of the biggest, maybe 2 years before, the biggest, I don't know, the most profound healing that I had. I was in a few different classes and then that's when I spent the time with my life coach for 6 months. And so those were probably where I made the most progress. And, you know, my life coach was I don't know if I told you this when I talked to you before, but she was a writing coach and I had done a little bit of writing. And so that's what I wanted to do was writing. So we didn't talk about writing. She was a life coach, but a writing coach. We didn't talk about writing, but she was helping me with things that were going to help me with my writing. You know what I mean? She was helping me with my heart and my thoughts and my things that were going to help. But by the end of the 6 months, I wanted to do a podcast. I didn't even want to do writing. So, you know, it worked. It helped. Whatever she was doing totally helped. And so I'm thankful. I'm not thankful for that journey. I wish I didn't have to go through that. I wish,
of course,
no one would ever have to go through that. But I'm thankful for the opportunities that I've had to find healing. And I would encourage anybody that's listening, it's not fun to have to face that kind of stuff. It's not. It's, in fact, it's really, really hard, but it's so worth it. It's so worth it.
Thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing that with me. I so deeply appreciate that. And I hear you in the sense that, like, it is not fun. It is oftentimes one of the biggest critiques I hear about therapy and counseling, and I think there's something to say for it, is that it can re-traumatize people when you re-confront the initial trauma, because you've built up all of these defense mechanisms to protect your unconscious and your heart from the deep hurt and betrayal that came, and to have to look at it again can be super re-traumatizing. But, you know, I just want to ask, what makes it so worth it? I think it's easy. It would be easy for me to assume, like, yes, it's worth it because, like you said, you have your voice and there's a sense of freedom there. But I would love to hear that in your own words. What does the worth it really feel like for you?
Well, for me, you know, we talked about this in the other interview. I am a Christian and I, you know, believe in God. I have a relationship with the Lord. And for me, I finally felt like I could be who I was created to be. I wasn't trying to be something that I thought everybody else wanted me to be. I stopped trying to people please and trying to make sure everybody was happy, because that was an effect of, you know, the trauma, to make sure everybody was okay. And I stopped doing that, but now I finally feel like I can be who I was created to be to begin with. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons I'm sad that I had to go through that. My marriage suffered a lot for a lot of years. And that's one thing I'm sad about, is my dear husband has been, I've always said he has the patience of Job, and he had to have it to be married to me, because he is the most patient person on the planet. And, you know, it wasn't fun. It wasn't easy for a long time for us. And so I'm thankful that now it is. Now it's good. Now, you know, I know who I am, and I'm able to speak up when I need to speak up. And he appreciates that, you know?
Right. And that's a healthy relationship, is to want that from your partner and to appreciate when you have that, that it is a partnership in that way. I think that's so beautiful. To speak to your faith a little bit, I so deeply appreciate your commitment. Was Christianity the religion you were raised with?
Mm-hmm.
Did you, and have you ever had a journey of turning away, coming back? Because I do want to ask if having this experience problematized any of that faith for you. I know we hear stories of, you know, parents who lose kids, and that's the thing that, there's no explanation for something like this. What was that journey like in reckoning with this horrible, horrible thing that no one deserves, while still grappling with your faith?
I didn't ever turn away from the Lord. I don't understand. I don't understand why it had to happen. I don't understand why a lot of things happen in this life, except that we live in a fallen world and people are professional mistake makers. You know what I mean? Everybody's going to mess up, and it's some consequences are worse than others. Some mistakes are worse than others, but we just live in a messed up world. I never turned away from my faith. Like I said, I don't understand why it had to happen, but I know that God has been with me the whole way. And I believe when you make the commitment to choose Jesus to be the Lord of your life, which is what I have done with anybody does that, if you truly have a relationship with him, it's hard for me to understand why you would want to turn away. I get being angry. I get, like, if something happened to one of my kids, I hope that I wouldn't turn away, but I get it. I get being that devastated and hurt. I totally understand. But this, as far as this in my life, this did not make me turn away. This, through the healing process, made me, I think, lean more on the Lord, because I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it by myself. I'm not strong enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm just not capable. I mean, really. So it didn't for me. It didn't for me.
Wow. That's really remarkable. And I think, you know, even if it does shake someone's faith and they come back, or, you know, it sends them on a different path, I think that everyone certainly has their own journey with their faith. But that level of commitment is certainly nothing to shake a stick at, right? And I think everyone deserves to have that sense of security and safety in their life, that it sounds like your relationship with your Lord really does provide for you. And I love what you said about being able to be who you were created to be. Who do you think you were created to be? When you think of that, and this one thing I've really been on lately, because in spiritual communities, people will talk about their higher selves and their highest and best self. And I'm a little, for lack of a better term, fed up with the hierarchy of that. Because like you said, we all make mistakes. We're all going to mess up. To me, it's not about the highest, being the best at anything, because you can't. So instead of your higher self, I've been on telling people I believe in your wholer self. So all of that to say, to you, who is this wholer Shara that you were created to be?
Well, you know, obviously, we've just covered this, but obviously my relationship with the Lord is the most important. But in that, as he, you know, I felt like I have been healed, I'm able to be a better mom. I'm able to be a better wife, for sure. I'm able to be a wonderful grandmother. That is my favorite role of all the things that I do. You know, my gifts, one of my gifts is hospitality and serving. I love having people in our home and feeding them. I love cooking and baking, and in our church, you know, I love helping. I love serving. And that is a big part of who I was created to be. I love talking to people. I love, you know, learning about people, and the podcast gives me a place to do that. It makes it just an easy way to meet some incredible people. I mean, that's a lot of who I am. I hope that answered your question.
No, I love that. Absolutely. And it sounds like the crux of a lot of those things are connection, right? Even whether it be your church community, family, friends, like it really is about sharing space and sharing energy with these people in your life. And I think that that is something that I am just continually reminded of in my journey and my work, is that even though we do need to be alone to do a lot of this healing work, and introspection is so important, that our connection is what colors life. And so to have those gifts, I think, is really, really special and important. Why, in the very beginning, you also mentioned that you have this innate curiosity about people and you want to know about them and understand them. And I think that very nicely ties into this connection piece. Why do you think it is that you have that curiosity when you meet someone? What is that spark?
I mean, even as a kid, I just have always loved meeting new people. I don't know what it is. I love learning about, maybe it's, you know, one of our greatest needs, I think, is to feel seen and heard. And maybe because I felt that for so long, I wanted that for myself. Maybe I project that, you know, wanting somebody else to feel seen and heard. You know what I mean? I don't know. I just have, absolutely, even as a kid, I've just always loved meeting new people. And where are you from? And what do you do? And why are you here? And how did you get here? And I just love people's stories. I just do.
Yeah. I think that that's so beautiful. And just having that curiosity, it keeps life interesting too. It keeps life fun to be able to always have something to ask. So one thing that raises for me in this, like, there is just this thing that's always been with me, right? And I think all of us have a piece of ourselves that it feels like has just always been there. And of course, different people based on their theology, their worldviews will call it different things: soul, mind, personality, self, you know. Do you believe in that eternal piece of the self? And if so, how do you conceptualize of that? Because I think one of the things that complicates that for me is how much we grow too, right? The fact that I am so completely different than I had a birthday a few weeks ago and I was just reflecting on like the last year and I'm like, holy cow, like the amount that you can change in just 1 year. And yet there is still this piece of me that I do feel is eternal and wholer than myself. I'm sure it ties back to your faith as well, but I'd love to hear about how you describe that and couch that and feel about that, especially since, you know, there's no two ways to be a Christian as well, right? Everyone has their own unique relationship to that.
I don't know if I fully understand your question.
Yeah. So, if there is a, do you believe in a soul, something that is more innate to us? And if so, how do you define soul?
I do believe everybody has a soul. And I believe as a Christian, you know, our souls matter when we leave the earth. I believe that it matters. If you choose Jesus, if you accept him as your Lord and Savior, I believe the Bible. I'm not listening to a church. I'm not listening to a teacher. I believe the Bible. The Bible says if you choose Jesus, when you leave this earth, you will spend eternity in heaven. It's not about the bad things that you've done are not going to send you to hell. Not choosing Jesus is going to send you to hell. That is my personal belief. So I do believe I have a soul. And I wanted to kind of go back to something I said earlier, you were talking about my faith.
Please.
You know, yes, my faith didn't waver throughout all this healing, but I'm not perfect. I mean, along the road, I've made a lot of mistakes. So it's not like I'm this super, you know, always happy, everything's always good. That's not the story. The story is that I never believed that I wasn't loved by God, or that he ignored me, you know, when I went through all of that, or that he didn't care. I didn't believe any of that. I was a messed up woman for a long time. I made a lot of mistakes. And I just want to clarify that, because I don't want anybody thinking that, she's super faith. That's not the case at all.
Yeah, no, thank you for highlighting that. I think that it is important to, you know, hold the complexity with that you can, like you said, you can be really angry and frustrated and confused and not have answers, but still like that is the very definition of faith, right? It's like belief without seeing, without knowing. And I think that's super powerful.
Hey, y'all, it's Reese just briefly interrupting the conversation to ask you what you think. Let me know in the comments down below. Have life's difficulties ever made you question your faith, spirituality, relationship to higher power? And why do you think that is? And if it didn't cause you to question anything, why not? I would love to hear about it. Also, if you are enjoying this conversation, please give it a like, leave us a 5-star rating or review, and subscribe wherever you may be listening or watching. That is the best way to support the Cohere Collective, to support the Making Meaning podcast, and allow me to continue bringing meaningful conversations to you. I also want to shout out Colton Sweeney over on TikTok. He commented on a recent episode of the Bow Down podcast, a clip from the Bow Down podcast. Yes, yes, and also yes. Men need to correct ourselves and each other. And that comment was on a clip where I was discussing patriarchy, and I really appreciated Colton's addition to the conversation there. So if you are interested in being shouted out on a future episode of Making Meaning, definitely engage with at the Cohere Collective across social media, wherever you may have it, and in the comments down below, and you just may see your name shouted out. Okay, back to the beautiful Shara Goswick.
in this process of healing, I think there's something so poetic about the piece of your story that is about your voice, right? And of course, there's so many different ways to engage with our voice, writing being right. one of those ways. But of course, the podcast, mm-hmm. like it's like the medium of the yeah. voice. And so having found that as this kind of pinnacle of a lot of your work, I think is really, really beautiful in this poetic sense. Talk to me a little bit more about the journey to finding your voice. Do you think there was a moment where you felt like you lost your voice and you needed to get back to it? Or is it something that you had always been searching for and found?
I think it was something that I didn't even think about for a long time, for decades of my life, because I was so used to not using my voice, not telling people what I thought or asking questions or, you know, sharing my opinion or whatever it was. I think I just lived like that for so long that, as I began getting healed, as I began going to counseling and taking classes and stepping out and sharing my opinion, sharing my voice, sharing my thoughts, and I realized people didn't look at me and think about me the way that I thought they did. I'm not stupid. I do have good opinions and good thoughts. And my dad always said growing up that everybody has an opinion. Opinions are like armpits. Everybody has them and they all stink.
There you go. I mean?
Opinion, doesn't matter what my opinions are, but even sharing. And so here's a typical situation that would come up for a long time. And maybe you or anybody else has been through this where someone would ask me to do something that I didn't want to do, whether it was helping or serving or do whatever it was. And I didn't agree with it and I didn't want to do it, but I'd do it anyway because I didn't want to say no. But the entire time I'd be resenting them. And it was really my fault for not being honest and not being real. You know, that was something that happened a lot. And when you learned, you know, part of it is healing. Part of it is my age. I think once you hit 50, you just don't care. So that's been a big part of it too, is I just don't care. I don't care and I don't purposely want to hurt anybody or offend anybody.
Of course.
I don't care. I'm going to say what I think now, and that's okay. I would rather be honest and be real and be kind about it than keep my opinions to myself and, you know, be angry inside because I'm not saying anything.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I've been really working through in my own work is this people-pleasing and how people-pleasing actually is an act of manipulation, and coming to terms with the fact that it's something that I was trying to do to earn love, acceptance, attention, safety, you know, name anything that a human being wants or needs. But even though I had good motivations and I thought that it made me a good, kind person, the manipulation piece was in wanting to control how that person felt about
right.
me. I wanted to manipulate them into liking me and control that, as opposed to letting go and letting them make up their own mind about
yeah.
me. And then exactly like you said, how you start building this resentment, I would hold on to for so long this feeling of like, well, no one really understands me. No one really sees me. No one loves me for me. And there was a moment with my therapist a few years ago, and she was like, Reese, I hear you, and it is painful to not feel understood and loved for who you are. But in order to be loved for who you are, you have to show up as who
right.
you are.
Right.
Otherwise, you're never going to feel understood. And I was just
That's
kind
so
of
good.
Sat there like, you're right, you know, like, and of course, in session, I'm like tears,
right.
and then like we work through it. But I absolutely resonate yeah. with that story. And I think that a piece for me that just is so powerful about the voice that you're talking about is that feeling of like, yes, I am doing this for me, but it actually is allowing you to better help and serve other people
yeah.
too.
Absolutely. That's so good what she said to you. You have to show up as your true self. And that's scary sometimes. It's scary a lot of times, but it's important.
Yeah. Absolutely. I want to ask you about your family as well. So you mentioned you had your first daughter, your first child in high school. What was that experience like? I imagine it came with some judgment from peers and family, and I don't want to presume to know anything about your family of origin, but I can imagine how difficult that would be to be in that situation, and the amount of like self-judgment that could come in there too, when exactly like you said, you're just trying your best. Yeah. So talk to me about that journey.
I would not recommend it for anyone. It was very difficult. And, you know, thinking about my childhood, one of the effects of that trauma was being able to compartmentalize and disassociate. And so, you know, I got a lot of looks. You know, I went to school the day she was born. So I, you know, walked through the halls.
Wow.
Yeah, with a very pregnant belly. And lots of looks, lots of little comments. And it was not fun. It was not fun. I will tell you that. But I'm very thankful that I did it. I'm thankful that I carried through with it. We had very supportive families, which we couldn't have done it had we not. They were both very, and I'm so thankful for that, because that's not always the case. So, you know, and, you know, we jumped into real life really quick. It wasn't that they did everything for us. We chose to get married, but we had to do all the adult things, you know, when people our age were having fun and doing all the other stuff. And it was hard. It was very hard. But, you know, there are benefits to having kids very young. And I, like I said, I wouldn't recommend that at all. But, you know, we're very young grandparents. Our kids are all grown. Yeah. We get to, even though we still feel old, we get to, you know, have fun. We have energy and we get to go watch them play sports and do fun things. And that is one benefit of it.
Yeah,
it was a hard road. It was a hard road.
Absolutely. My dad's mom had him very young. And that was something that was always really special about our relationship, was that she very much was present and was able to be there for so many things. And it's such a special relationship to have that. But also to speak about grandparents, like your daughter's grandparents, having two supportive families. I know even for me and my brother, because both of my parents were working, my mom and my dad were working. And so we needed after school care, and we were lucky enough for that to be family instead of, you know, a babysitter or daycare, which are completely valid and beautiful options. But I do think that there's something really unique and special about being able to spend that time with grandparents. And you mentioned y'all did still go to college. And so being in college while also raising a child is no small feat. And so I would have to imagine that really does come with reliance on y'all's family. And I bet that also, even though it is a different relationship than some kids have with their grandparents, I would have to imagine, of course, correct me if I'm wrong, but that your kiddos probably are very close with their grandparents.
They are. They're, you know, we've lived away for most of their lives. So it hasn't been, you know, I lived two blocks from my grandmother growing up. So I was very, very close to my grandmother. I spent much of my childhood with her. And I was the first grandchild, and I was the only granddaughter for many years. So I was the favorite. I'll just say that I was
on it.
Yeah. But we saw her 2 weeks before she passed away, which was 10 years ago. She was in rehab hospital, and we went to visit her, and I could hear her talking down the hall as I was walking. So I went in her room, and she said, "Oh, look, it's my oldest and most important grandchild." And I was like, "Can I record that? Like, to have it to play for everybody else?" 'Cause that was awesome. That was a very special relationship with me. And I, you know, my kids are close with their grandparents. They just didn't see them all the time because we were a good five, 6 hours away. And My husband finished his bachelor's degree when we graduated from high school. I stopped after 2 years because I had another baby. And then we moved. He was a physical therapist. And so we moved away so he could go to PT school. And when we moved away, they were 7, 5, and 3. And we didn't have family with us. That was hard. Yeah. That was definitely the three of the hardest years of our marriage, for sure.
Sure.
Because, you know, I didn't have a degree. I couldn't have gone to work and made any money that would have covered daycare for 3 kids, you know.
Right.
So it was pointless for me to try to
work. The cost, yeah. Right, the cost benefit analysis,
it wasn't
you
worth
staying
it.
Home yeah. to take care of them makes more sense than going to
sure.
work just to put that money into daycare.
Yeah. So he couldn't work because he was in school all day, every day, you know, 5 days a week. And so we lived off of school loans for 2.5 years. Took a long time to pay those off. I'll say that, but we did it. And for us, it was an investment because we knew he'd have a great job. It was for our family and for our future. And so it made sense, you know, to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you talked about relying on family and they did help us, you know, they would come and visit. One of my favorite things is my husband's mom would mail us like socks and underwear for the kids when they were little. And that was like gold. I mean, it was so nice, you know, such a sweet present to have in the mail.
Yeah.
But, you know, stuff like that. They helped us out and were there for sure for us, you know. But, you know, as far as being very present in our town, we didn't have any family.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and having the split experience of feeling very supported, but also having physical distance,
yeah.
right? That's the reality of a lot of people's families.
Yeah.
And you can still feel deeply emotionally connected with someone, but there are just certain things that being in the same city and in space with someone that it offers a difference. It's different to being able to, you know, an emergency happens. Can you come pick me
right.
up? It's like,
right.
Tomorrow,
right. Yeah.
maybe.
It'll be a while.
Yeah. It's right. Yeah. It's totally different. So I want to hear more, and forgive me if I'm just being nosy, but I also, one thing that I just kind of have a pet fascination with is like long-term marriages. My parents have been married for 33
years.
Oh,
wow.
And
see, I'm probably your
yeah,
mom's
so
age.
When you said that, when you said that, I was like, oh my yeah. goodness, that's how long my parents have been yeah. married. And in my generation, like all of my friends in my friend group, it is very much like pretty much split down the middle, whether parents are divorced or still together. And if they're divorced, some are remarried, some are not, you know, or some have long-term partners but didn't get remarried. And being a witness to my parents' marriage and how much both of them have changed over the years, and also as I've gotten older and have been able to have more adult conversations with them about the challenges of that and why they made certain decisions, it's just fascinating to me the motivations that different people have behind marriage, but also behind staying or leaving. And I would just love to hear more about you and your husband's choice to get married, because like you said, you chose
right.
that. It wasn't as though anyone forced you into that decision just because you had a child. So what motivated that? And through all of these, you know, difficult moments, but it seems like still exciting that, you know, you chose to have a second kid pretty quickly.
Well,
so
I don't know that we chose to have a second kid pretty quickly.
Fair enough. But yes, I would love to hear more about that journey and y'all's relationship, because even speaking to you in your personal life earlier, you said your husband is the patience of Job,
yeah.
but I would imagine it's also deeply difficult to witness your life partner and the person you love most in the world going through and processing and healing from what you went through and having that healing journey. So yeah, I would just love to hear more about y'all's relationship and what that journey has been like.
You know, he is my best friend. When you talk about your person, your ride or die, your, you know, he just is. And I think, I mean, I do love him and we have so much fun together, but I think we've also grown up together. You know, we were teenagers yeah. when we got together. And getting married, did I know what love really meant at 17? Did I understand what marriage was going to be? No, I did not. But, you know, here was this guy that I loved and I liked being with him. And, you know, eventually we were going to get married, I'm sure. We had a baby together. Like, why would I not? Like, it didn't make sense for me not to. I wanted to be with him. Has it been easy? No, it hasn't. But, you know, I don't know any marriage that's been easy. If there is right. one, please come tell me how you do it, because it's two different people living in a house together. Like, he and I are completely opposites. I mean, completely opposites. We were talking yesterday about how we went to watch our granddaughter play volleyball the other day, and I was driving, and he would say I have directional dyslexia because I will get lost. Like, I always have at least one GPS on, if not two. Like,
that's me too.
And he doesn't ever get lost. And he was talking about how we were, I don't even remember this, but he said we drove through a parking lot. We were trying to get to a store down the road and we're trying to do it without getting back on the highway. And I drove through apparently the longest route that there was. And he said, I didn't say anything. I just kept my mouth shut. And I was like, but we got there, didn't we? Like, does it matter how fast?
We're safe and we're here.
Yeah, we arrived. So we're just different. We think differently. We process mm-hmm. differently. He has a completely different past than I do. I mean, completely different. And he has been very patient with me. And I mean, I just feel like I was a mess for a long time, but he loved me through it. And, you know, I think his relationship with the Lord was it had to be pretty strong, and he had to rely on him too, because I don't know that I would have wanted to stay married to me. I just was a mess, and I was a very hurt and broken young woman. But he's my best friend. He makes me laugh every single day, every single day. You know, we have coffee together in the morning, every morning, and we pray and we just talk about the week or the day or whatever is going on. You know, we support one another. I think we make a great team. I want to help him. I try to make his life as easy as possible for him to get ready for work and head out the door so he doesn't have to think about his lunch or, you know, whatever. It's already done for him, so he doesn't have to think about it. He's got enough to think about as he leaves to go to work. He helps me when I need help with things. There was a time when I had a bakery for about a year. It was so fun.
Wow.
Yeah, I loved it. It was so fun. But he had to kind of pick up some slack at home because I was exhausted every day from, you know,
yeah.
what I was doing. So, you know, I feel like we make a great team. I love him. I love being with him. And it's not perfect. It's not always, you know, picture perfect, but he's my person. He is my person.
Yeah. I love that. One thing I was talking about on another podcast conversation I was having was the definition of love, actually. And I think that my friend that I was talking to about it, he said, you know, the more I think about it, the more I think it's like the Supreme Court definition of profanity or pornography, where it's like you know it when you see
right.
it. You can't really define it, though. And there's something very much like that about love, where it's like, you know it when you feel it, but how do you really categorize it? And the thing that I came to was that love is the thing that is both inevitable and out of your control. Like, you can't really choose who you love, but it is also a choice
yeah.
every day. And that is something that I feel like I have really seen in my parents, is that they choose each other every
sure.
day. But also, I have seen how inevitable it is that they love each other, that they can't choose not to either. Do you have a working definition of love? And you know, you jokingly said earlier, what's the secret to the happy
yeah.
marriage, easy marriage? But what would your pet advice be for someone else, especially like high school sweethearts out there? That's a rare thing too.
It is. I definitely think love is a choice. because I do have those warm, fuzzy feelings about my husband. I do, you know, enjoy being with him, but sometimes he makes me crazy. I mean, let's get real. And I know I do the same. Like I just told you, me taking the longest route, that drives him nuts. But I choose to love him, and it's not hard for me to do that, but I choose to do it every day, and he does the same thing. I don't know, you know, I think getting married early for me, I think it probably saved me from a lot of heartache, just because of the broken person that I was when I got married. I think it probably saved me from a lot. I don't know. It's hard because I don't recommend anybody getting married immediately after high school. I don't think it's wise. It works sometimes, but I don't think it's the smartest thing. I mean, I think the best advice I could give to any young woman, for sure, make sure you're good. Make sure your heart's good. Make sure, you know, I wish that I had done all this healing work before I had gotten married, because I think it would have changed a lot in my marriage. But like I said, I hadn't even confronted any of it before. I mean, it was years right after we were married before I did. So that's one thing I wish I could have done differently. And that's one piece of advice I would give to any young woman. Make sure you're good. Make sure you know who you are, and your heart's good. You're not holding on to hurt or anger or anything, and fix all that. Do what you can to work on that before you jump in. Because marriage is not just moving in with your boyfriend. It's a commitment. It's a covenant, and it's a big deal. And so I wish I had been able to do all that before we got married. I think it would have made things a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. And that makes me think of, you know, my mom had a few pieces of advice for me when I was younger and like pre-college and all of that good stuff. But one of the things that she told me was, absolutely, you are not looking for your other half.
Right.
You are whole in and of yourself. And only when you feel that to be true and you have that love with yourself is when you will be able to build the partnership, right, like you were saying, being a good teammate. Yeah. So I think that's really, really important, and something that, you know, it can help a lot to have someone else there supporting you during your healing and someone to love you when it feels like you can't love yourself. Yeah. But there is certainly a spectrum of commitment, right? Yeah. In this sense of like, you don't have to get married in order for someone to support you along your healing journey as well. There's a lot of ways to support one another without
fully
legally binding forever and ever.
Yeah.
I also want to ask you about being a grandmother. You said it's your favorite role.
It is my favorite role.
Talk to me about that.
It is my favorite role. You know, my grandmother, and I hope I will not start crying, my grandmother was my favorite person in the whole world. I mean, she was everything. And I do not recall one time ever talking to her my entire life where she did not get so excited to see me, like she hadn't seen me before. Like everything I did was special. And even as an adult, she treated me that way. I used to, like I said, she's been gone for 10 years. And I haven't seen it lately, but like every time I'd go into Ulta, I would go find her perfume, spray it on a little thing, you know, because it smelled like her hugs, and I miss her hugs. I guess I always wanted, I never said this, but I think I always wanted to have that kind of a relationship with my grandkids because it was so special to me. And it honestly, I think that's a big part of my healing journey, is that I had her there for, you know, my whole childhood. I needed that. I needed that safe place, you know. And I get to do that with my grandkids. And my grandkids have a completely different life than I ever did. Thank you, Lord. They are living the safest, most beautiful, wonderful home. You know, I'm so proud of my daughter and her son-in-law because they are raising two amazing young women. And we just have fun. We just have fun. When they come and stay with us about once a month. I try to say no as little as possible. Like whatever they want, I'm going to say yes to. I buy all the snacks. I have all the food. I have, you know, one time we were coming home and the younger one said, because they're about an hour and 20 minutes from me. They're actually not far from you. The youngest one said, you know, I've always wanted to try a Fanta. And she was like 6 or 7. You've always wanted to try Fanta? And she goes, yeah. And I said, well, then let's stop and get one. So we stopped at the store on the way. She didn't like it at all. But anyway, we tried it, you know.
But you were like, you
we're
know what? That's something we could make happen pretty easily.
Absolutely. So it's just fun. I just have fun. They have their own room here. We built a house 5 years ago and they have their own room. And we have fun. We have pancakes for breakfast every time with lots of sprinkles. And I have a whole shelf in my pantry with snacks that, you know, the baskets are always full of snacks before they come over. And they know that they are welcome to anything in this house. There's nothing off limits for them. And we just have fun. We just have fun. I love.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it's a blast.
My cheeks hurt from smiling because it reminds me of time with my grandparents. And I think there's something so, so special about, like you said, the safe space that your grandma provided you, because of course your parents are your parents or whoever your key caretakers are, but they're also your key disciplinarians.
Yeah, it's different with
grandparents. And that creates, it is. And like you said, you don't have to say no, the same way that parents who are with them 24/7 are very much being mindful of boundaries and keeping them safe and how rules provide safety. And not that there's no rules at grandma and grandpa's house, but it's a different type of allowance and safety and freedom that I think really is so special and allows kids to really, really feel into being kids. And there's something so important about that play. And like you said, just being able to have fun. And, you know, who's to say if your granddaughter's going to remember the time that grandma stopped and bought her a Fanta to try? But that could be exactly. Yeah. And it also could be like a memory that sticks with her forever. That is, even the littlest things were important to my grandma. Yeah. I don't know if grandma is your grandma name or not.
So they call me Aya.
Aya.
So I have two nieces. I have three nieces, but the two of them, when they started talking, they couldn't say my name. And so they both called me Aya. Like, that's just what they started calling me. And now, obviously, I mean, once they could say my name, they called me Aunt Shira. But I thought, when I have grandkids one day, that is what I'm going to have them call me, because nobody else has that name. And I didn't want one like everybody else. So that they call me Aya. Yeah, it's, you know, one of their favorite things. And I love this. My daughter's been so good about, they get to have their iPads once a week for like 2 hours. Like, that's it. That's all they get. I will say that I do let them have them over here. But one of their favorite things to do is to go out, because we live on land, you know, they want to go out and get as muddy and dirty as they possibly can so that I can hose them down. Like, they think that's the funnest thing in the world. And I thought, this is awesome. Like, kids everywhere should be doing this, you know? So we do, we get dirty, we go for walks, we go find, we had lots of baby frogs out here a while back, like in the spring, they go catch baby frogs. Like, we just play. That's all we do, is we just play. I love it.
That's so beautiful and so important for you and your husband too, to be able to reconnect with the play and have that reminder. That, again, it's like, it's the connection. Yeah. It's the joy of life. That's so, so precious. And I love hearing about that. I do want to pivot a little bit into some of my more hard-hitting questions. Not hard-hitting.
I'll try.
But, of course, throughout our conversation, we've been talking around meaning and talking around purpose, and we haven't been using those words specifically, but I think anyone listening to the conversation can hear how your faith and your family and your story all colors that. But to talk about it a little bit more explicitly, for you, what is your relationship with the meaning of this life, and how have you, especially now, like, I don't want to say post-healing journey, because I don't know if healing is something that ever ends.
Right.
I think it's a continual process. But in this phase of your life, when, you know, now you're actively pursuing a podcast where you talk to people about these things too, what does meaning look like for you now? And what do you feel like that purpose behind you being here truly is?
You know, I think everybody has a purpose. I really do. And they're all different. You know, they're specific to you. I think God created each one of us with something. For me, it is knowing the Lord, is having that relationship with Him. But in that, it is, like I said earlier, being a mom and a wife. And, you know, I think the podcast is part of it. But I think, you know, what if one day when I faced God and I on this earth tried to do all these things and I wanted to do this well and I wanted to do that well, and what if He said, all I really wanted you to do was take care of your family? What if that was my purpose? I want to do everything that's before me well. I want to do it. I want to be a great mom. And my kids are all grown. You know, our youngest son lives with us and he is autistic. And I don't really, I mean, I still have to be a mom to him. But it's not like it was when they were all here and growing up. And so, it's, you know, I'm not really the kind of mom that I was before.
Sure.
He's walking by. I want to be a great wife. You know, I want to be the best wife that I can be. And I spent a lot of years not doing that. So I want to do that well now. I want to be a great, I don't know if I'm going to be a great grandmother, but I want to be a great Aya. I'm not ready for great grandkids, but you know what I mean? You know, I want to do whatever's been put before me. I want to do it well. I feel like that's my purpose, is to encourage others. And, you know, the podcast is a very big part of that. I get to, not everybody that I talk to is faith-based, but it doesn't matter. I still encourage them in their work, in their work, because I feel like I'm very picky about who I talk to on my podcast. And I say no a lot more than I say yes. So if I have somebody on, I believe in what they're doing, and I want to be able to encourage them in that. You know, what an honor that I would get to talk to people and encourage them in what they're doing. You know, I think what you're doing is so important, because like I said, you know, we all want to be seen and heard, and you're giving people a place for that, not just about their job, not just about their career or their nonprofit. You're giving people a place to share their heart and their thoughts and, you know, what they believe. In a safe way. Not everybody gets that. So, like, you know, what you're doing is super important.
Thank you.
But yeah, I think, you know, our purpose, whatever the Lord puts before you, whatever job or career or opportunity He puts before you, He puts before me, I want to do it well. And it's going to look different for everybody. You know what I mean? We all have different journeys and walks. And I like what you said earlier about the healing journey not really being ever being over. I think you're right. I think it literally is a journey. Like, it's something I'll be walking out for a long time. But that is my purpose, doing whatever's been put before me, doing it well. And that's my goal in this life.
I really love that, because I think oftentimes we get so caught up with what the purpose is, right? And I need to find my purpose. And there's this one big thing that I've been sent here to do, and I have to do it. And then one day I'll have done it and I will have achieved and, like, box checked, done. Yeah. And even as someone who deals in purpose, like that is my bread and butter that I love talking about, I think we have just so lost the plot about that, that there's actually so much more about the journey, about the evolution. And your purpose is really more about this guiding inner compass that, you know, I kind of talk about it like almost like if you pluck a string on a harp and there's something about the reverberation of that. When you hit true north on a compass, it's like you kind of feel that reverberation and you're always trying to go back to that. And it's that inner sense. But so many things could do that for so many different people and different experiences. So whatever it is that you land on that does resonate, to be able to do it well and to the best of your ability, I think is something that is really noble, especially because I often think about how like purpose is a privilege. Not everyone has the same access to have hobbies in their free time. Like free time is a privilege. Having a hobby, not having to worry about living paycheck to paycheck and the next meal on the table. And so to reframe this about whatever is in front of you can be purposeful, I think is extremely powerful and something we all need to be mindful of. With these pieces that have been placed in front of you, do you, and this is more of just kind of a curiosity, metaphysical question, do you feel like it is something that has always been destined for your path? Did you feel a calling to be a mother and a wife? Do you feel like that was always something meant for you? Or do you think the path was a bit more unfolding? And now that you're here, it's doing it well. What's the...
I know. I always wanted to be a mom. I think I had a lot of ideas about careers, what I wanted to do, but I always knew I would be a mom. Like that. That's just what I wanted to do. So my daughter's name is Kylie. And when I was 4, my mom had her third baby, my second brother, but he was supposed to be a girl. We thought he was going to be a girl. Because back then, back in the olden days, they didn't do ultrasounds unless there was a problem. And so she knew that I was a girl. She knew the next one was a boy, which she was right. And then she just knew the third one was a girl. Well, it wasn't. It was a boy. And he was going to be Kylie. So my dad, I remember this. My dad called me from the hospital. I was at my grandmother's house to tell me I had a brother, and I hung up on him because I was so mad that he was a boy. Now, I love my brother, but at the time I was unhappy. And so they bought me a little doll and I named her Kylie, a little baby. And so I just knew when I had a girl one day, that's what I was going to name her, was Kylie. You know, like I said, my story's a little different. It didn't, you know, I didn't plan on getting married and having a baby at 17.
Sure.
But I always wanted to be a mom. And that, besides being a grandmother, that's my other favorite role. I mean, it is, like you said, a privilege. It is an honor to be able to do that. Motherhood, parenthood is one of the hardest, most rewarding things you can ever do, I think. I mean, it really is. And you don't get it. I mean, you can see it from the outside, but you don't get it until you're there. It's the best. It's just the best. I have 3 amazing kids, and, you know, because of my daughter, I have my 2 granddaughters. So it's awesome. It is awesome.
Yeah. What do you think that internal drive of that desire to be a mom came from? Because even from a young age, you know, you still have baby dolls. It's like, of course, I think there's something to be said for the whole nature, nurture piece of it. But even at a young age, having that desire, do you have any thoughts on,
you know, I think I've always been a nurturer. I always want to take care of the people that are around me. You know, having a gift of hospitality, I love having people in my home, but I want to make sure they're fed well. I want to make sure they're comfortable, that there's places for everybody. And, you know, that's just me. And I think that's just always been in me. I'm a nurturer, and I guess that's where it came from. I don't know. That would be my guess.
Yeah. I think that's really beautiful. And I love that you said comfortable and fed well. Like, these are very just like comforting things. And I want to ask, what's your favorite dish to cook?
I don't know if I have a favorite dish to cook. We talked about this last night because we had friends over and I made taco soup. And she was like, I don't know why I don't think about ever making this. And I said, well, I have all these meals in the back of my head that are good for a crowd. And that's one of them. Things that I can throw together quickly when I have lots of people that will feed, you know, plenty of people. So I don't know if I have a favorite. I just love to cook and prepare and have people sitting around my table and eating and talking and whatever.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. There's something I find myself saying quite a bit is sitting around a table with a good meal and laughing with my friends is church to me. In so many ways, because that is like just losing yourself in a laugh with your favorite people. Like, there's something so deeply spiritual about that to me. Talk to me about that relationship that you have with your faith and your spirituality. Of course, you mentioned that you do have a church family, a home church. But what are the surrounding practices that you do to really support that? Because, of course, faith is so much more than just church on Sundays, right, and Christmas and Easter. What does color in the rest of the picture for me?
Well, you know, when I say I have a relationship with the Lord, it's like a relationship with anybody else. To have a relationship with someone, you spend time, you talk, you listen. And so every day, mostly every day, I have a devotional that I read. It's I love Joyce Meyer's devotionals because they're short and to the point, but it's a lot of truth. I mean, it's what you like. That's what I want from anybody. Tell me what I need to know, but do it quickly. And so yeah. I learned better that way. So I have a Joyce Meyer devotional that I've gone through multiple years, but I love it. You know, I read my Bible every day because for me, that's where I get instruction. That's where I get to hear from the Lord. And I, like I said, I'm not smart enough to do this life thing by myself. I'm not smart enough. I'm not creative enough to do what I'm doing on my own. And so I need direction.
I mean, no one is, right?
That for me, that's where the direction comes from. It's praying. You know, I think prayer is a gift that we have. And I, you know, pray every day for my family and different things. But I also started several years ago, I started these prayer journals. So when somebody, I have them for all my children and grandchildren and everybody. But when somebody that in my life was going through something hard, I would start a prayer journal for them. So then I would just write out my prayers. So now I have a ton. They're not all full, but you know, when I want to pray for somebody, that's what I'll do. I'll get it out and just, you know, write out a prayer. Prayer's a big part of my life because I think it's important. So yeah, those are my practices.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I really love thinking about prayer as a communion. Of course, it's not what you think of in the traditional church sense of communion, but when I think of like the etymology of the word communion, to commune with someone, to be in space, in presence with them, that is the heart of relationship, exactly like you're talking about. It is, you know, whether it's a conversation or not, you're sitting in that energy with one another. And I think that that is something that is so important for anyone, even for people who may not have a higher power, to sit in presence and commune with themselves. I think that there's, I read something the other day that was talking about how there's prayer, meditation, and journeying are like three aspects of a Venn diagram of like communion with higher power, and that, you know, there's like shamanic journeying, Eastern meditation, and then a more Western style of prayer. But there's something very specific that, even though they all are different and have their own twist on the relationship with the divine, there's something that they all share that is this connection, something bigger than ourselves. So I love that. And I think, you know, whoever's listening, regardless of your relationship with a higher power, prayer is powerful. It's really, really powerful. And even as someone who doesn't consider myself a Christian, I pray every day too. You know, it's like, it's just a beautiful, beautiful practice. Well, this has been a lovely, lovely, expansive, and vulnerable conversation. Thank you for sharing so much about your story and being willing to share that not only with me, but with the collective. I deeply appreciate
that.
Thank
you so much for having me. You know, this is a safe space, and I thank you for being patient and listening to all of it, and for allowing me to, you know, I feel like we go through hard things. No, I don't think we go through them to help other people, but I think that when we do go through hard things, when we come out on the other side, still standing and still, you know, able to move and function, I think it's a waste when we don't offer to help other people. So maybe my story will be encouraging to somebody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. My final two questions that I always like to add just to round out all of the beautiful things that we've talked about. One, is there anything that you would like to add, to go back to clarify, to underline, or anything that we didn't touch on that you're like, you know, I really would like to throw this in there too?
I don't even remember everything we talked about because we talked about a lot. I don't think so. You know, I just think anybody that's out there that is living in shame, or, you know, they know there are things that they need to walk through to get healed from their childhood, from their past, don't be afraid to do it. Find a safe place. Find somebody that's going to listen and truly help. But go for it, because you're missing out. You're missing out on life, and people are missing out on you. You know, there's just so many reasons to work through that and keep going. And don't get to the end of your life and then regret not dealing with that. Gosh, that would be sad. Yeah.
Well, and I love what you said, that not only are you missing out, but people are missing out on you. The thing you said earlier was that going through the healing journey is what allowed you to be who you were created to be. And regardless of people's worldview on, you know, if you were created pre-womb or if it was nature and nurture and that's how you were created from something. And whoever that is, the wholeness of that is worthy of being expressed. And I do deeply believe, like, one of the convictions I hold strongest about making meaning just in our lives, but also purpose, is that we all have a duty to show up wholly as ourselves to the world. And so not only is not walking the healing journey shortchanging yourself, but it's shortchanging the world, what the world deserves. And like, I want everyone's wholest self. So I second that, I suppose. Oh, a very long-winded way to say I agree. My final question to hopefully put a little bow on our conversation is, what is one word to describe how you're feeling right now?
Thankful. I am thankful. I'm thankful for this opportunity, Reese. You are a beautiful young woman inside and out, and I'm so excited that I got to meet you and connect with you.
Me as well. I am similarly feeling very thankful, and I love that we start with gratitude and end with gratitude. Shara, thank you so much for being
here. Thank you.
Thank you all so very much for being here, and a huge thank you to Shara for her time, energy, and deep vulnerability in this episode. I try and prepare my guests for the topics that we get into on this show, but a lot of the times I don't know the full extent of everything we're going to talk about, and that was certainly the case in this episode today with Shara. I didn't know we were going to dive into childhood trauma and abuse, but that is a big part of meaning making, not just trauma and abuse, but what we do with the circumstances that life brings us. We don't make meaning in a vacuum, and that means we need to be analyzing and considering all of the aspects of our life, from childhood trauma to adult trauma to schooling to socialization and culture and communities and all of these things. That's why I talk about my relationship with therapy so much and all of the different pillars of coherence, right? It's not just one thing that brings life meaning. It's not just one thing about your purpose that you can check off and have it completed. You can't ever complete this stuff. So I'm really, really grateful to Shara for vulnerably opening up and allowing us to discuss this deeply important aspect of coherence and meaning making. Again, if you're interested in listening to the Life Stories podcast that Shara hosts, it will be linked down below, as will her website, so you can go check out all of her work. If you are interested in working with me to find and pursue your purpose, links to do that will be down below as well. And if you're curious about our story of the Cohere Collective of Making Meaning, head to www.thecoherecollective.com and be sure to follow us across social media, all at The Cohere Collective. You
we'll find more than just podcast things over there. You'll find clips and lessons from therapy and my life and all sorts of cool stuff. So I would love for you to follow along wherever you have social media. If you would like to stay up to date on all things Cohere and coherent living, subscribe to our Muse letter, which you can get on our website just by giving us your email. Everything completely free, and every week you will receive weekly insights for inspiration, coherence, an essay that talks about whatever that theme is, journal prompts, practices that you can use to deepen your coherence, recommendations for other podcast episodes, books to read, essays to engage with, to hopefully surround yourself with different materials besides just me and what I'm saying, but all people who are helping us live coherently in all of the different ways that we all support each other along that path. A huge thank you to Nicole Ostreicher for Making Meaning's art and podcast cover. You can find her on Instagram at Nicole O Creates or Nicole O Design. And a big thank you to Tristan Morgan for Making Meaning's theme music. You can find him on Instagram at Tristan Morgan. Right now, I am feeling energized and recentered. I talked about it in our last episode a little bit, but how transformative this time I feel like has really been for the collective, and I'm certainly feeling that. But what does the time right after transformation look like? What does that generate? And what do we need to do to take care of ourselves to lock in the new growth? I feel like a lot of times I'll go through a period of transformation and then I backslide into old habits and behaviors and thought patterns that aren't serving me. And I just return to the same issue over and over again until that lesson really sinks in. And this time around with transformation, I'm really trying to set myself up for success. What are the things that I need to do and be mindful of, and the boundaries that I need to create with myself and hold myself accountable to really lock in this growth that is important, that I need, and that I'm excited to be doing? And that's not just about bubble baths and face masks like we talk about, but it's about the accountability. A friend just shared with me a really beautiful quote from Will Smith, actually, which may be a surprising source, but it's such a good one. What is the full quote? I might butcher it, but it's essentially, current self-discipline is the key to future self-respect. And that entire process that he's talking about is self-love, right? Like, can you really love someone without respecting them? Can you respect someone without loving them? It's a symbiotic relationship there, and it all takes place in here, in yourself. So yeah, I'll leave that with y'all for some food for thought. Let me know what you think about that quote down below, in the comments or anywhere on social media. I would love to hear what you think. And thank you so much for being here, for being my favorite part of Making Meaning. And as always, I hope you feel like you are living more coherently. Until next time, love.